I really appreciated your tears. There is no apology and no need to feel like you need to have that under control. Deep feeling is honorable. I'm not trying to tell you to be any way different than you are, but I want you to know it means the revelation of your heart is a huge gift to me, and I pray you don't stop that for the look of being in control. It is a gift to feel your heart and to feel what you carry and how much you love people. What it made me think about, considering some of what you said, because I know this experience, is where I stand and I say something beautiful and someone interprets it as, you don't love me. You want something from me that you have conditions on how you will love me. And when David said yesterday, you know where it begins, I have to check all the time whether or not there's anything in me telling people that. Or am I saying, I love you, I'm with you, let's do this together, and I will sincerely and seriously protect what is sacred to me. That doesn't mean anything about you other than I'm going to be doing this. Do you want to do it with me? And I want to do it with you is the biggest invitation. I want you, I love you, I need you. I want to say it again. I want you, I love you, I need you. And I don't say that lightly. I will do what I can to make sure a person is seen and feels valued. And if what's going on in them is saying, you don't mean it, I can't do anything about that. Because I will speak words that I mean and mean the words I speak. And I will stay in my integrity. And if someone challenges me and says, well, you said this and you're not doing it, I'll take a look at it. But ultimately, it's what's precious to me is my word, the way I love people, the way I protect this home, how I actually pay attention to the way I articulate my love so people feel safe enough to release the things that are killing them. You know, there are things that are making us miserable, and I have friends who remind me I'm making myself miserable. You know, that I'm repeating patterns that are killing me. There are a few of you who are looking at me right now who you know you've done that. It's like, really, really, really. It's kind of like, wah, wah, wah. All right. I had a patient in my office this morning, and she says, I want to ask you a question, and I know you don't have the answer. It's like, well, that's a great way to start a conversation. But she said, this is a longer story, the longer description of it, but she says, my daughter has finally met a man, and I think they're going to get married. They're both 40 years old. And his mother has cancer. And she's had it for 2 years, and she's not done anything about it. And they just told her she doesn't have much longer to live. And she's wondering if I have some magic potion. You know, I'd be a billionaire, you know, if I did. But she was saying, what can I do? Because he's grieving so much about his mother. And so I said, well, take a step back and realize there is no answer, you know, when someone is, first of all, is that far down the line with their health. But what is it that's needed for him to feel your love and support, for your daughter to feel his love and support? And you don't have to say anything to the mother, because people choose the way they're going to live their lives, and people choose the way in which they're going to leave often. I don't know if you've been with people who, lots of people are giving advice how to prolong their life, and they've already decided, I'm cool, I'm done. But there are people imposing on them, you just need to try this therapy. I had this friend once, and her grandmother was, I think she was 94, and they were going to move her to a new nursing home. And she was just like, the last thing in the world she wanted to do was have a new home. So she kept saying, I keep holding my breath, but then I fall asleep and I'm breathing again. But she was like, so ready. Like, the idea of moving again was like totally not of any interest to her. And the only solution she had was to hold her breath, hoping she'd end it all. But the reason it's significant in the story, what I'm sharing with regards to how you speak to people is like, how do you find the way to let a person be seen, blessed, loved, and think for themselves? And let them choose. I mean, she has chosen, and in some way, this woman is two steps removed from the woman who's dying, and she's trying to fix the situation for this woman, mainly so she can save her future son-in-law the grief. So why not love the future son-in-law and let him be held in your protection and just say, whatever you need, I'm here. I know this is really hard. What do you need from me? I want you to know I love you, and I know this is going to be hard. To find words of kindness, to find words of upliftment. I know some of you are reading of Karen Pritchard's experience with her son, and every time I write back to her, I'm trying to find words that let her feel we've got our arms around her, because she is in grief, and it's like, what do you say other than the best words you've got for someone to know they're loved, he's loved, the situation is held? But it's got to be sincere, and it's got to be real, and it's got to be a thing the person feels when you say it. So when David was up here, the list of, let's go from this to this. Let's go from believing you're not wanted to knowing you're valuable and seen and important. Live in that reality. Let's go from the place of thinking people want things from you that you don't have to give to, I really want to be here. How can I let you guys know that, and how can I bring my love so that we can do this together? Do you want to do this with me? You know, I want to do it with you. Karen wants to do it with me. She's the only one saying yes. Thank you, Karen. I give one. And that doesn't mean we have to do it together in this particular shrine. Like, if you don't want to be here, I still want to do it with you. I am a shrine unto myself, and I appreciate what Uma was saying, what Rude was saying, and also Diana. To be a shrine means I will keep what's sacred to me sacred, and I won't impose it on you, and I will do my best never to violate the shrine that you are. And it can be imposing to try and tell someone how not to die. She's not very old. I mean, if he's 40, his mother's about 70. But it's still her choice. I mean, the choice she's made for 2 years not to take care of the situation she has. So to try and impose some emergency action on someone who has said, this is how it is. And I'll tell you, I know a lot of people who have refused to put poison in their body to fight cancer and just said, this is my body, this is what's happening. But it's not about that. It's more about her desire to bless, and we have habits of blessing by imposing instead of blessing by holding. I mean, hold someone in your shrine? God. When someone does that for me, they're not giving me their opinion about how I should change my behavior. They're not telling me that what I did was a screw-up. Changed my word there very quickly. They're just saying, I see you, I love you, what can I do? How can I empower the greatness you are? And I can tell you, it means a lot to me when someone is saying, I see you, I love you, and I want to do this with you. Because at times you feel like I could, maybe nobody else does, but I feel like if I walked out the door and never came back, would anybody notice? I'm just saying, I often have that feeling of invisibility or lack of importance or whatever it is, whatever wound that was from when I was little, that's how it gets interpreted by hitting a wall, and you just think, well, it doesn't really matter. When I've been investing my life in emissaries of divine light since I've been 22 years old. It's not about the organization. When Martin was alive, he said, you cannot sign a paper and join. It is about the revelation of yourself in your living. And I've dedicated myself to being clearly, as clear as I can be, of the revelation of the angel I am and welcoming the angel of another. And so I go back to you, Rude, and say, when you hold the heart of another that way, what a gift just to love them that way. David was mentioning, you know, things that happen in our life that change us and will never be the same. Uma mentioned one for herself. The one for myself was, which might seem like a funny one, but I realized in high school that I was being taught that sexual desire was a sin. And I had to come to terms with, so God gave us this and then said, suffer till you die. Really, I mean, that's how the Catholic Church saw it. You know, like, you should not indulge with this unless you want to have children. And if you never get married, you should never indulge. So, like, I had to come to terms with what a bizarre reality that was of a God who created me with this lovely passion and attraction and said, ha, 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 no for you. I mean, it just didn't make sense. I mean, it, like I say, it's a funny one to reference, but it was kind of like the first time I thought, so who said? That was a big who said for me, because to be in the convent or the priesthood meant you had to be celibate, and that was the most holy function in the church, celibacy and being in those positions. Who said? And when you come to the point in your life where you're finally asking who said, you're starting to think for yourself. And you're owning your own thinking and your own feeling about what's real. I think my time's up because Uma's alarm keeps going off. Sit down, Jane. Sit down, Jane. Well, I guess I'm done. So I'll turn this over to David at this point.
Well, you think about my section. I never think about it.